Production support for Earth Eats comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. And the Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom, step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. From WFIU, this is Earth Eats. I'm your host, Kate Young.
We've been getting some really intense winds and storms lately, so that's been a big deal. That, with the drought, has been affecting a lot of people.
On today's show, drought in Colorado has led to a destructive fire season, and it's also wreaking havoc for local growers in the region. We speak with the manager of a farming cooperative in Cortez about the challenges of limited water supplies and the role of a co-op during a difficult growing season. We've got a report from Harvest Public Media on the importance of veterinarians learning Spanish to better communicate with the staff charged with caring for animals in the farm industry. And we have a fun recipe for a smoothie bowl packed with nutrients and flavor in equal measure. So stay with us. Alex Chambers has a couple of news stories for us. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Kate. We've got two stories about resistance this week. One is about communities resisting the expansion of factory farms, and the other is about bacterial resistance to antibiotics. As factory farms plan expansions, this summer more than one community has fought back. Residents of Haywood, Tennessee recently met to express concern about Tyson Foods expanding a chicken operation nearby. Community members say the chicken operation will pollute the air and local waterways. Scott Banbury of the Sierra Club's Tennessee chapter said the operation could cause phosphorus and nitrates to build up in waterways, causing problems for aquatic species. Tyson released a statement saying it currently does not have plans to expand in Haywood. But meeting organizers say they know that at least one farmer contracted by Tyson purchased two pieces of property in their county. As of now, those pieces of property have been put back on the market. Meanwhile, residents of Lone Jack, Mississippi, won a stay against the planned expansion of a cattle farm in their neck of the woods. The Missouri State Department of Natural Resources initially approved Valley Oaks' permit application to expand its cow herd from 600 to almost 7,000 on June 15th. But the owners of Powell Gardens, a botanical garden located near the farm expansion, leveraged social media to express their concerns that the expansion could affect residents' quality of life and their business's bottom line. In its ruling to stay the permit, the State Commission found a significant potential for irreparable harm as a result of the increased number of cows in the region, and that the environmental protection interests outweigh Valley Oaks' interests in accelerating its operations. When bacteria develop resistance to antibiotics, people can end up with infections that don't respond to available medicines. Three universities in the Mayo Clinic are looking to address that with the Institute for Antimicrobial Resistance Research and Education, which will be housed at Iowa State University. The goal is to bring together human, animal, and environmental studies of antibiotic use and resistance. ISU veterinary medicine professor Paul Plummer will lead the new center.
Any use of antibiotics selects for resistance. And so even when we use antibiotics prudently, there is still the significant potential for that resistance to develop, and that has consequences.
The University of Nebraska and ISU will together invest almost $1.6 million over the first 3 years. The University of Iowa is also a partner, and Plummer says he hopes to find additional collaborators. Thanks to Taylor Killow and Harvest Public Media for those stories.
Thank you, Alex. We'll see you next week.
You bet, Kate. I'll be here.
About half the people who work with livestock in the U.S. are immigrants, and many speak Spanish. That's not the case for the veterinarians guiding the farm workers. As Harvest Public Media's Esther Honig reports, there's a push in vet schools to open those lines of communication.
Dairy worker Esperanza Yanez examines a heifer with a stethoscope. With one hand on the animal's underbelly, she leans in for a close listen. Over the years, she's learned to spot a sick cow. She says she sees signs that most people don't notice. She works with a veterinarian on a regular basis, following complex instructions for a medication and diet. But the medical terminology can be confusing, especially if English is your second language. Since coming to the U.S. 2 decades ago, Yanez has taken English classes and practices by watching game shows like Jeopardy.
Oh, La Wheel of Fortune. Yeah.
Still, she'd feel more confident working with a vet who speaks Spanish. And many of her coworkers haven't been in the country as long as she has. To avoid embarrassment, she says they'll say they understand the English instructions, but when the vet walks away, that is, everyone's standing around asking each other, what did they say? The language barriers at this Colorado dairy are common on animal farms across the country. The most recent numbers from 2015 show that more than half of workers in the U.S. dairy and meat processing industries are immigrants, and many are Spanish-speaking.
We graduate from vet school as experts of reading the animal, but very little attention is paid to reading the people who are taking care of those animals, right, and trying to communicate with them effectively.
Noah Roman Muniz is a veterinarian and associate professor at Colorado State University. She grew up in Puerto Rico and noticed the language gap while interning at a veterinary hospital in Colorado. To get a leg up in the job market, she thinks all veterinary students should learn Spanish.
The reality is that if we're going to give training, if we're going to instruct people to do the right thing for the cows right now, we should probably do it in Spanish because workers feel more comfortable.
Veterinary schools across the country have noticed the need. Purdue has a Spanish podcast for vet students. Kansas State and Texas A&M have a class called Spanish for Animal Health. Roman Muniz worked with CSU instructor Shannon Zeller to design courses that streamline Spanish by teaching students the verbs and vocabulary they need for working in the field. For example, explaining vaccinations or vacunas and describing a horse that's colicky or colico. Eventually, Zeller wants to design programs for professionals who work with construction workers, out in the field with migrant farm workers, and in hospitality.
But we have so much Spanish-speaking culture within our borders that I think language departments are becoming more aware of meeting the needs.
At La Luna Dairy, workers line up the cows in the milking parlor. Workers don't just carry out a vet's instructions. Yanez says because of their experience and the time they spend with the animals, they can help determine an animal's diagnosis. Of course, she says they have to be able to communicate that. For Yanez, learning English took about 32 years and was born out of necessity. She's worked on farms where the managers spoke no Spanish. She thinks other workers should learn English, too. It helps the farm run smoother. Of course, there are barriers, like the cost of classes, low education levels among workers, and the long hours they spend on the farm. After a long day at work, says Yanez, you just want to go home and rest. Esther Honig, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media covers our food system from the heartland. You can find more at harvestpublicmedia.org.
So what have you got in the CSA today?
Kale and mixed lettuces, which are something we try to have every single week. And then we've got some really super sweet carrots from Homegrown Farm, which people call the sugar carrots. And then we've got mixed heads of lettuce, we've got some fresh garlic, some fresh onions with their greens, and sage and parsley, as well as zucchini for the first week. My name's Kendra Brewer. I'm the general manager of Southwest Farm Fresh Cooperative.
So this is
week three of a 16-week CSA. We're just ramping up for the season. And we actually do this market style. So instead of just handing people a box already filled with food, we lay everything out and say, hey, you can take whichever bundle of kale you want, whichever tomatoes you like. And then if somebody is not interested in kale, for instance, they could leave it on the take one or leave one table so that somebody else could take that home with them. And, you know, and then people can make trades and things like that. We're a cooperative of farmers that operates like a food hub. So we sell collectively farmers' foods to wholesale accounts like restaurants and markets, as well as through CSAs like this, which we call our Harvest Share program. We're currently waiting on our warehouse to be finished so that we'll have an actual space with a walk-in cooler and an actual home that we're at. We've been kind of doing this out of mobile trailers for a long time, refrigerated trailers. Different than just like a regular business where you go in and you're managing this business, you know, and you're trying to make a profit off of it. This is a for-profit cooperative, but it's really about managing a lot more people. So when you're managing 20 some odd farmers and, you know, working with them every week to get the best produce that you possibly can out to your accounts, who are also tend to be smaller accounts. They're restaurants and smaller markets. So everybody's got very specific needs, very specific issues that come up day to day and week to week. So there's a lot of relationship building happening, and there's a lot of, you know, bringing people together, trying to find the right fit. Who's the right fit for this account? Who's the right fit for this farmer? The nature of our economy is that people get what they want when they want it. They need things right away. Most vendors that sell to restaurants, they have just gigantic storehouses of stuff that they could get the next day. The way that our model works is that the farmers send me an inventory of what they have in the field ready to harvest by delivery day. And I send out that list to my chefs and to my accounts, and then they tell me what they like, and I send that list to the farmers, who then only harvest it after it's already been ordered. And then it gets sent off to the restaurant, you know, the day that it's been harvested or the day after, typically. But we can only make that delivery once a week for each market. So, you know, for a lot of chefs, that's not how their kitchen is set up. They don't have a lot of, you know, refrigerated storage to hold onto things for a week. And they're running on really tight margins, so it makes it really difficult in this day and age to be a farmer and to be able to supply what people need and what they've come to expect in terms of convenience and price being the biggest one. It's really hard to make it work for everybody. For us, we just, you know, have the best quality produce we possibly can, because that's what makes all of the difference. So there's a lot of that in addition to just the day-to-day moving the goods, you know, every week on time.
So it's a cooperative. It's a bunch of farmers coming together wanting to have this ability to sell, but they're farming, so they've got to have somebody to run it, and someone who's not farming. So you're exactly. you're not farming.
I am not. This is the first season I'm not growing more than a few herbs for a while.
You might recognize Kendra's voice. We've had her on the show before. She used to run the garden program at Mother Hubbard's Cupboard. That's a food pantry and community food resource center here in Bloomington. So I'm used to seeing her knee-deep in compost, transplanting seedlings, or pruning a peach tree. She recently relocated to southwestern Colorado in Cortez, a small town near Four Corners. I visited her while traveling last month. She was wrapping up a CSA pickup station in Durango. While Kendra is clearly in her element, surrounded by rugged mountain ranges and that big Colorado sky, I knew of her gardening expertise in a humid climate with typically plenty of rainfall, even in the summer months. This part of the country, near Durango, has been in the news this summer for forest fires, fueled by a serious drought and lack of snowpack over the winter. I asked Kendra about the particular struggles facing the growers she works with in Colorado.
It's a different set of problems and struggles to deal with, but also some things are, you know, you have less disease issue very often when you don't have it raining so often. But, you know, people have to be very smart about their water usage. And water rights around here are really tricky. It's really, really hard to understand that. There's no good roadmap for understanding an irrigation situation versus the water rights, even like a mile apart from each other, two farmers might have very different water rights and their situations might be really different. So there might be a ditch that's full of water, but if you don't have the legal right to any of that water because, you know, it's all been promised to Las Vegas, you just have to watch it go by. Yeah.
So is that are those issues that you have heard from some of the farmers that you're working with?
Oh, yeah. And farmers that are in our cooperative and not in our cooperative have, depending on their area and their water situation, you know, some have had to plant a lot less this year, knowing that they won't have the water to support those plants growing throughout their entire life. Yeah, that's been the main thing, is people knowing that it's going to be a bad drought year because there is no snowpack and planting a lot less. There are some folks who have all the water that they'll need, and so it's been really a blessing to have them in the cooperative and to be able to help take up some of the slack for some of the farms that needed to scale back their production for the year.
Yeah, it's kind of the definition of a cooperative in a way, that some can fill in where others are lacking.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's funny. The first thing back in Indiana as well, I remember at the farmers meeting that we had there, the main thing that everybody had to say is that we're independent and, you know, trying to work together was a struggle. And the same thing here. Farmers, you know, both within the cooperative and not within the cooperative, the first thing they'll tell you is how independent they are. And it's really hard to survive on your own, but it's also really hard to accept a community way of doing things sometimes, instead of, you know, if you're farming your own piece of land, you've got a pretty good idea of, you know, how you like things to run in your little world. And that can be hard to step outside of and go into a more like shared space and to operate a little bit differently there. And so for me, as the manager of all of these different entities, you know, I've got some like big farms that have more produce than we could possibly sell, and then we have some smaller farms that could never supply enough of their particular product for the cooperative's needs. And so they've got very different needs, and they're asking for very different things. You know, the farmers with the larger acreage and the bigger production are asking for, you know, let's lower the prices so that we can sell more. And then the ones that don't, you know, every sale is very dear to them, they want the prices higher. And so like trying to find that balance for everybody is important. But it's also important that we have such a diversity of farmers and a diversity of farming situations in our cooperative, because if it was all one type of farmer who did one type of thing, or if they were all very, very small farmers without the balance of some of, you know, slightly larger farm, then it wouldn't work.
That was Kendra Brewer of Southwest Farm Fresh Cooperative in Cortez, Colorado. Find links to the organization at eartheats.org. Production support comes from Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, moving its local branch to 1155 College Mall Road in August. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner's CFP and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Need more coffee roasters? A woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world, offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Located on Pete Ellis Drive, needmoreroasters.com. And Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. Today we're joining Jackie B. Howard in the kitchen. Jackie works in membership here at WFIU, but she has a lot of professional experience with food, including running her own business, Bee's Soda Bar, here in Bloomington. Lately, her focus has been on nourishing herself in a way that feels good, tastes great, and is practical for her budget and lifestyle. Her routine includes taking a portion of her Sunday to get meals ready for the week. I joined her on one of those Sundays. She prepared several dishes in just a few hours, and one of them was new to me, a smoothie bowl. She started with some butternut squash that she'd cubed, seasoned, and roasted in the oven.
If you're not familiar with the smoothie bowl, I'm not a fan of smoothies. I don't like to drink
I don't like to drink it. There's something about the thickness. It's just not my style. I was never really much on milkshakes either. So it's just not really my style. But the smoothie bowl takes a smoothie, makes it a little on the thicker side, and then you're gonna serve it like it's yogurt. So I'm gonna put a bunch of toppings on there. So I get the fruit and I can make it, that means I can make it without dairy if I don't want to. I'm not a big fan of yogurt. So because it's too much, to me it's too much dairy to have, just personally, my body doesn't like it. So I'm just using enough butternut squash here for one smoothie bowl for myself for breakfast. So that's about a cup of butternut squash. And then I'm gonna pull out of the freezer some frozen banana halves. And these are just as they get too ripe to be eating in a regular way. I freeze them. So they're gonna be extra sweet on their own, which is really nice. And then I don't have to add any sugar to my smoothie bowl other than the fruit. So I'm taking just one sort of large half of banana. I'm gonna do coconut milk today because I have pantry things that I need to be using, and canned coconut milk is one of them. And I would eyeball it to the thickness that I want. I want to control how I want this to be for myself. So I'm going to start a little low on the coconut milk and then add to it. So I'm probably going to start with like a quarter of a cup of coconut milk. I usually would add almond butter for these orange vegetables. This is my first time doing butternut squash as a smoothie bowl, so I'm excited about it. I've done sweet potato. I've done carrots. I really love carrot and make it like a carrot cake smoothie bowl. Pumpkin is really great. But for those vegetables, I want a little more sweetness out of it and make it take that like slight vegetal flavor from it. I mean, I like the way that tastes, but in breakfast, people think it needs to be a little sweeter. Smoothie, you think it needs to be a little sweeter. So I like to add almond butter to it. It gives it that like toasty baked flavor. So I'm going to add a little of turmeric to this. I'm going to do sort of a take on the golden milk for my smoothie. So I'm going to add some turmeric. It's really good for you. I already have the cinnamon and such on my butternut squash. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to add just a few sprinkles. We'll say it's probably a quarter of a teaspoon of the turmeric. When you use turmeric, you want to add just a pinch of black pepper. I know that also sounds a little strange, but it helps you absorb the turmeric, those benefits from the turmeric. So I'm going to do just a tiny bit of black pepper in this as well. And that's like one crank on my grinder. And then I'm going to add some clove because I really love clove. And it's going to complement those spice flavors that I have. And then fresh ginger, just a little nub. So potent, and it adds a little spice, which is nice. And I'm just throwing that right in. Now I'm gonna blend it. So I do need more liquid in there. And this is, I want to go through this process because I want to be able to control the exact thickness that I get to. So I'm gonna add about another quarter of a cup. That looks creamy and beautiful.
Almost like pudding or something.
Yes, yes, yes. That's exactly it. And that's what's so nice. I mean, there are times I make it, I'm like, I feel like I'm having pudding for breakfast. But this is vegetables. So I'm gonna put this in a bowl. And this is really thick, so I really have to like pull it out of the pitcher here. And that is my personal preference. You can do them thinner. And a lot of times, so I really like to do these sorts of bases, the sweet potato, things like that. I like to do avocado ones because I want it to be thick and creamy because that's what I like. It doesn't mean, you know, a traditional, quote unquote traditional, if there's such a thing as a traditional smoothie bowl.
Yeah, this is the first time I've ever heard of one, so.
the classic, we'll say, is acai, and that's a fruit, and it usually a lot of times people put ice in them, and it's not nearly as thick. This is the way I like to eat it. So now I'm gonna add some of those cherries. I'm gonna do coconut and granola and chia seed. You can put whatever you want on there. I've made my own granola, but I really love Muddy Fork granola. It's made locally. They have a bread oven that they cook in with wood, and it makes such a huge difference. Like the granola isn't too sweet, which is again really important to me, and the smokiness from the wood is in there, and it's so good. And it's going to go really great with the warm flavors of my butternut squash. And I've got just flaked coconut. I could have toasted this and it would have been nice, but I kind of want the color variation.
The white is really nice against that color though.
Yeah, thanks. And the wait till the cherries go on it, it's gonna pop, they're gonna be really nice. And then I do chia seed because I really like the chia seed. Again, you could do anything, you could put anything.
Sprinkle some nuts on there if you want.
Mm-hmm. Pecans would have been really good as well. I'm really just gonna eat this right away, so there's no need to make it fancy, but it's more fun that way. And that is your smoothie bowl. Do anything that you'd like with it. Put anything you want in it. Feel good about it. It's so satisfying and filling. It'll get you through the morning.
You'll find this recipe, as always, at eartheats.org.
All right, so now I get to dig into this smoothie bowl. The butternut squash is so creamy. Spicy from the clove and the cinnamon. The cherries really pop on top of it against that like warm butternut squash flavor. Yeah, this is so good.
Thank you so much, Jackie.
Thank you. Thanks for hanging out with me today.
We'll be featuring more recipes from Jackie B. Howard on Earth Eats in the coming weeks. She's got that cooking for the week thing down to a science, but a flexible science. Using what's in season, what's on sale, and making it all adaptable to your particular diet and taste preference. So stay tuned to Earth Eats for more from Jackie. Production support comes from The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom, step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, moving its local branch to 1155 College Mall Road in August. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And need more coffee roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world, offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Located on Pete Ellis Drive. NeedMoreRoasters.com. Our Earth Eats team includes Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killo, Daniel Orr, all the folks at Farm Bloomington Restaurant, the IU Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks this week to Kendra Brewer and Jackie B. Howard. Earth Eats theme music is composed by Aaron Toby and performed by Aaron and Matt Toby. Our executive producer is John Bailey. I'm Kate Young. I produce the show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.